Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened radio show.
And aloha, America. Welcome to Hump Day, Wednesday, middle of the week. Let's tune in and see what's happening with the Democratic National Convention. And yes, it's finally official. Barack Obama is the official candidate for the Democratic campaign for President of the United States. Earlier today, it became very obvious as they were counting up the potential delegates that it was going to be impossible for Hillary to take the nomination in a poll, a roll call vote, a floor fight. So she started making the necessary, very polite noises about bowing out and supporting Barack Obama. And finally, just before the start of the roll call vote, she released her delegates. And then when during the roll call vote, when Hillary, as part of the New York delegation, got the microphone, moved to suspend the rules, terminate the roll call vote, and basically declare by acclamation that Barack Obama is the candidate. So it is official. Barack Obama is the Democratic nominee. Hillary Clinton is out of this race. We don't have to worry about her running for high office for 4 if McCain wins, or 8 if Obama wins years. Now, it may entirely be possible that some kind of backroom deal was made, and Hillary may be looking at a cabinet position or an ambassadorship, or even, I know it's been floated, that she might be considered for a Supreme Court judgeship should one become available during Obama's term, and that is actually quite likely. So, now, I want to respond. I got a lot of hate mail, from Hillary supporters about why I just have so much animosity toward the Clintons and toward Hillary. And, you know, they write in and they say, well, you obviously just, you've got a problem with women in positions of authority. It's absolutely not true. I don't have a problem with a woman as president. I have a problem with that woman as a president. And I do because all these younger supporters of the Clintons, they see the posters and they see, you know, the banners and they see the media puffery. And you know something? Take it from somebody who works in the media industry. There are a lot of big stars out there, whether it's, well, look at Michael Jackson and how everybody was just totally crazy and in love with him. And, oh, they just thought it was wonderful, and they would have voted him for president if he ran. And then we find out, you know, he's diddling little kiddies off on the side when nobody's looking. Well, the same thing is in politics. Politics is just another form of show business. It's no, it's no surprise that politicians and show business people like to mingle. They're basically in the same line of work. They go out, they pitch to the audience. They build an audience and a big, huge support from which they make their money or their votes, and that's basically what it's all about. And the stark reality, as we find out from people like Larry Craig, is that there is a public image of the politicians that you can fall in love with and say, yes, I believe what this person stands for, and you will support them. And then there's that private personality who's maybe not quite so wonderful. Now, I've, over the course of some 30-odd years working in the film and TV industry, I've had a chance to meet a lot of big movie stars. Most of them are really very cool people. There are a smattering of total jerks. I'd use another word, but we'd lose the license on this here radio station. And the same is true for politics. There are a lot of people out there who are really seriously trying to do a good job, and there are a lot of sharks who just see politics as a way to personal wealth and aggrandizement and glory and vanity and ego. I mean, even yesterday, listening to Hillary's speech, it was all about Hillary. Yes, I support Barack Obama. The reason I am in politics is I do this, I do this, I do this. Ooh, bad McCain. And I promise I will work for this. And it was just watching Michelle Obama's face just, you know, Michelle Obama, don't ever play poker. You can't bluff. You're terrible at it. Watching her face, it was, you know, you could just see what was going on there. It was all about Hillary. And even in her gracious releasing of everything today and releasing the delegates, she's still pushing herself. And it's not a surprise that a lot of polling that's been going on today shows that most people still, to this very moment, view that Hillary was never serious about helping Obama. She was trying to help herself. Anyway, the news we get from the backroom dealing is they were counting delegates right up until late last night and seeing who would still vote for Hillary and who was going to vote for Barack Obama. And Hillary's people basically came up short. She had 40 whips on the floor trying to flog more votes out of those delegates. They couldn't get them. So starting last night, they said, okay, we're not going to go to a roll call vote that is going to embarrass Hillary. So Hillary will concede and release her delegates. And that will be that. And the rest is just pro forma, which is the staged show we all got to see today. So why am I against the Clintons? It goes all the way back to Iran-Contra. And I know a lot of the people who are young voters today barely remember that. It was a huge, huge scandal in which private individuals, many of them had government connections, but they were operating outside congressional control, setting their own foreign policy, violation of the Logan Act. They were selling arms illegally to Iran. They were using the money to support the Contras against the Sandinistas, a little private little war going on there. And in the middle of it was this pipeline that went from MENA, Arkansas, down to Nicaragua. And this pipeline and names like Barry Steele and his airplane, the Fat Lady, you know, were part of this whole thing. And a lot of the Air America people that used to fly heroin out of Vietnam were part of this Iran-Contra operation. They would fly guns down, and on the trip back, they would bring cocaine by the ton into the United States. It would be sold. The money would get laundered through these various Arkansas state agencies, the Arkansas Development Finance Authority, all these land flips and all these shady banks, Whitewater, Flowerwood, Castle Grande, all of these different money laundering, money growing operations. And everybody was taking huge amounts of money from it. And basically, it was all illegal, of course. And yet it was all being kept under wraps. And Governor Bill Clinton was in charge of that end of the pipeline. And we know he was in charge of it because every check that went out from the Arkansas Development Finance Authority to go to the companies that were providing the food and the guns and the other logistical support for the Contras, had those checks had to be signed by Bill Clinton. So he was part of this operation. Everybody involved made huge, huge amounts of money. And when Bill Clinton decided he was going to run for the White House, he was kind of a shoo-in. And the reason was very simple. A little bit of history here. The Iran-Contra operation probably would have remained invisible to the ordinary American citizen, except that one of the airplanes, in fact, I believe it was one of Barry Seale's airplanes, crashed. Now, Barry Seale himself was no longer with us at that point. He had been assassinated after turning state's evidence on this whole thing. But a gentleman by the name of Eugene Hassenfuss was on the plane, and he survived the crash, and the Nicaraguans arrested him, ordered him to talk, and he did, and he blew the lid off the whole thing. And there was this huge, official investigation, which was basically designed to head off all the other investigations and say, no, you can't investigate what's going on over there. We will do it. That's our job. We're the Congress. You shut your investigation down. We are investigating ourselves. And they got Lawrence Walsh was the special prosecutor, and they started basically holding these hearings, and our own Hawaiian Senator Daniel Inouye was chairing them. And every time they would start talking about Arkansas and the airport at MENA and getting anywhere near that cocaine money flow that was paying for it all, Inouye would shout executive session. They'd slam the doors, kick out the public and the media, talk about whatever they're going to talk about. So that part of the story was kept very, very secret from the public. So here we are at the end of Bush the Elder's first term in office. And he is realizing that he can't survive another 4 years trying to keep the scandal from hitting him because there's too many people looking at it. He's still the president. He is a target. People are trying to find out, what is our government doing? Does CIA stand for Cocaine Importation Agency or what? And we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, I'm going to finish up the story of why Iran-Contra gave us the Clintons and this whole culture of corruption between the Bush and Clinton families we've had ever since. And we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work. doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Now, to continue from where we were in the first segment, here you have this Iran-Contra operation. Guns are going down to the Contras to fight against the Sandinistas. All of this without the approval of the Congress. It's just a little private, little off-the-shelf operation that CIA and a bunch of other people are running. And they're paying for it by bringing cocaine back into the United States and selling it and laundering the money through all these various banks and land flips and an Arkansas state agency, which was being run by Webb Hubble, and the checks were being signed by then-Governor Bill Clinton. And the whole thing unravels when Eugene Hassenfuss is rescued from a plane crash by the Nicaraguans and blows the whistle on everything. And it's a big, ugly scandal. So George Bush Sr., who was in the White House when this was all coming apart, was, understandably very nervous. The finger of suspicions as to who was ultimately in control of this were getting closer and closer to him. And it became very obvious he could not stay in the White House for a second term of 4 years and expect to hold the scandal off. So he decided he needed to lose his reelection bid. And he set about trying to find a Democrat he could safely lose to. And, of course, the one Democrat that he could count on to help shut down and keep the lid on the Iran-Contra operation was the Democratic governor of the state that was the United States end of the pipeline. That was Bill Clinton. And, you know, you immediately had the media, which is under CIA control, protecting Bill Clinton. There's a videotape of executive producer Don Hewitt of CBS 60 Minutes admitting that they edited their Jennifer Flowers segment on 60 Minutes to discredit her and help Bill Clinton become the candidate. They were propping him up. They were polishing him, much as the way they're doing with McCain now, to push him forward and make him the candidate. So that by the time the American people get into those ballot, those polling places and pull the lever and push the button, it doesn't matter who they vote for. It's a pre-selected, pre-approved candidate. So this is what brought the Clintons from being merely ruling class of Arkansas to being in the White House. And as soon as they were in the White House, people started dying. The four top fundraisers from Clinton's first presidential campaign, men who'd been seen basically coming in with piles of cash, and the return address, the donor's address, was the Democratic Democratic headquarters in Arkansas, which, by the way, was the scene of a shooting where the Democratic chairman got gunned down, and then the shooter got gunned down, so we still don't know what the real reason behind that was. But, I mean, these four top fundraisers were bringing in huge amounts of cash. There was no trace on it. Where did it come from? Just huge amounts of cash, and Bill Clinton became the president, and George Bush Sr. left the White House secure in his knowledge that he had turned the White House over to the one Democrat who could be counted to keep the lid on the Iran-Contra scandal. What we saw in the hearings with Oliver North was a limited hangout. They admitted to a little gun running, and they admitted to selling a few things to Iran and everything. But the real scandal of government-sanctioned, government-approved drug smuggling to fund covert operations. That was kept under wraps. That was the big, dirty secret. Now, go back a little bit earlier in history. Richard Nixon, when it was becoming very, very obvious that he was going to have to leave office because of the Watergate scandal, and Nixon knew that he was not going to survive an impeachment trial in the Senate, and worse, nobody wanted a trial to take place. Well, sooner or later asked him if, you know, with your re-election, a study in foregone conclusions against McGovern, why burglarize the Democratic National headquarters at the Watergate Hotel? And the reason for that was the Democrats had gotten evidence that linked associates of Richard Nixon with the assassination of John F. Kennedy back in Dallas, 1963. And if you go back and you read the transcripts of the president's tapes, the White House tapes, when he makes these oblique references to Cuba, that Cuban thing, that Bay of Pigs thing, that was Nixon's way of kind of talking about the whole Kennedy era mess that was going on there. And, you know, a lot of, you know, what Nixon would call shady dealings going on. And that was the point at which Nixon said, pay them off, keep them quiet, because he knew that it was going to unravel. So when it became obvious Nixon was going to leave, what does he do? He gets rid of Spiro Agnew, and he appoints Gerald Ford to be his vice president. Who's Gerald Ford? Gerald Ford was one of the original Warren Commission members. We now know, because of Gerald Ford's own admission, that he falsified some of the evidence in the Warren Report to support the lone assassin theory. In the explanation for how JFK got killed. Nixon made Gerald Ford his vice president because he knew that once Nixon had to step down and Ford became president, Gerald Ford would keep the lid on the really dark secret, which Ford did. As soon as Nixon resigned, Gerald Ford issued pardons for everybody, and all investigations into Watergate stopped right there. It's all about covering up the real nasty secrets. And there are a lot of them coming out of Iran-Contra. You know, we sometimes like to think of the Bush and the Clintons as adversaries because they're in different parties. No, they were partners. They were working together in Iran-Contra, and they were neck deep in all of this CIA-linked cocaine smuggling. There's a ton of research you can find. There's a book called Compromised: Clinton, Bush, and the CIA by Terry Reed, who was one of the pilots in the smuggling operation. It's a little hard to find. Obviously, there are some people who prefer you not read it. It's a very thick book, a very good book to read if you want to hunt that one down. So I have been dealing myself with the Clintons since Clinton's first term in office, when Vincent Foster, the White House deputy counsel and one of the key fundraisers who'd been carrying cash in, was found dead at Fort Marcy Park about 6 months into the first term. And this is the story that got me started on my little path toward being a political activist and an exposer of cover-ups, and what really happened. All of that came out of that story originally. And the reason I got put on that path is when I first stumbled over the truth about the murder of Vincent Foster and tried to make it public, Clinton's friends in Hollywood wrecked my career. They were calling everybody I worked for and putting out all kinds of lies, accused me of doing drugs and M&Ms and tap dancing barefoot on shag carpeting and all kinds of things designed to just get people to not do business with me anymore and to basically drive me out of town. And so I know what the Clinton people and their supporters are really like at the core, behind the posters, behind the signs, behind the badges. And it all goes back to this narco government that we have operating in the shadows of the United States. And both parties are in it neck deep. And it's an ugly, ugly sign. It's one of the reasons why we have a government that really doesn't care about the ordinary working people. And there's nothing new about drug lords being in charge of a government. Not too many years ago in Colombia, they put their president on trial for being a drug lord. They failed to convict, but at least they had the huevos to put him in that dock and at least make the accusations. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We've got a caller waiting on the line. But before we get to him, I wanted to respond to something that the show that is on just before my show, the host, Jim, was making a comment. I was plugged in getting ready for my show, and he was going on about why does everybody think Barack Obama is the new Messiah and all the rest of that stuff, and he doesn't have any really good ideas and blah, 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 blah. Now, I want to be honest here. Barack Obama, I'm going to vote for him, and I'm going to support him. Because I think he's marginally better than John McCain, but only just barely. And as Obama has moved center, he started to say and do all the things that everybody else is saying, and this whole idea that this really is going to be a different presidency is starting to evaporate. But he still gets my vote. But the one thing he does have that McCain does not have, and I think this is the reason why people talk about the new Camelot and Kennedy and the political messiah thing, is that Obama does have the ability to inspire people and make them feel that change and improvement is possible. And that is not something that we get from McCain. What we're getting from McCain makes us feel like it is. It's just going to be another 4 or 8 years more of what we've had for the last 8 years, and that is definitely not going to work. And so Obama at least does have that gift of making you feel like there's a chance to change things and push them up in the future. And I think that's the reason for some of the enthusiasm of the support that he has right now. We're going to go to the phones. Rob in Minnesota. Rob, aloha. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
That's going fine.
All right. Thanks for covering this story here. I, you know, it's something that's bothered me for a long time. I've, you know, this, the Oliver North, story. And, the thing I keep telling people, you know, when I try to tell them about him admitting to the secret government within the government and smuggling drugs and all that stuff, they kind of blow it off. And I say, you know, look, he had diplomatic immunity. Anything that, or whatever you call it, you know, he anything that he testified to, he could not, you know, be tried for. And
he had an immunity deal.
An immunity deal, yeah. And yet the one thing that he didn't have is, you know, had he committed perjury, you know, they would have nailed him for that. So basically, you know, anything that, you know, he said during that case, you know, you pretty much could, you know, say, you know, pretty much had to be true.
I'm not willing to go there. I mean, anything he said in the hearings was either the truth or he knew for a fact there was nobody out there who could contradict him.
Okay, let's
be fair and honest about that. Now, as far as the Iran-Contra mess, you know, we now know from the Iraq war that our government does lie to us about some very, very serious things. And obviously, as responsible Americans, our immediate task is to go back and look at some of these situations like Iran-Contra and the John F. Kennedy assassination and the Robert Kennedy assassination and the John F. Kennedy Jr. assassination and say, were we told the truth? And most people, most reasonable people, are going to look at those situations and say, no, we were given enough platitudes to reassure us to go back to our plows and back to breeding soldiers and paying our taxes. But it really, under careful analysis, doesn't make a lot of sense. And unfortunately, we are a nation where being in government, being at the upper levels of government, is so attractive and desirable that it attracts people who are willing to do anything to get that power. And as a result, people are getting killed. You know, there are assassinations. We know that Obama had that mishap with his airplane back in July, which they kind of minimized. And now all of a sudden they're admitting, well, yeah, it was pretty serious and they had the crash equipment out. We had these two bozos they arrested in Denver where they said at first it was an assassination attempt and then said, nah, it's no big deal. Now all of a sudden we're hearing these guys had false IDs and wigs and guns and bulletproof vests. And they're associated with, you know, American Nazi partiers or the Aryan Brotherhood or some such nonsense like that. Now, I don't think these guys are assassins, but boy, they're beginning to smell like they were the patsies for a real assassination attempt on Obama. And by getting arrested early, it kind of screwed the whole deal. So, but, you know, there are people who don't want Obama to get elected, and they're willing to get rid of their opponents in very violent ways. And again, I go back and I look at John F. Kennedy Jr., who was a week away from announcing his intention to run for that Senate seat where Hillary Clinton is now sitting. And all of a sudden, his plane falls out of the air on approach to Martha's Vineyard. And they try and blame it on weather. and it's completely nonsense. I've got family who live on Martha's Vineyard, and they were out there that night, and they could see the stars, and they could see the planes out over the ocean coming into the island. They had brand new lights in the middle of the island. They're so bright, the residents are complaining because it disturbs them at night because of their sleep. So this idea that it was dark and he was a bad pilot and everything was complete nonsense. He was on approach to the airport, and all of a sudden, he just crashes into the ocean. And
I think even that, like the National Transportation Safety Board, even there's a mention in there that his fuel selector was switched to off, which would just, you know, no pilot would do that. I'm a pilot, by the way.
Yes, so am I. And all the fuel selector would do is stall the engine. If you look at the radar track, it's obviously you're not dealing with a stall. You're dealing with an airplane that's basically lost its empennage.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know what to think of Obama, and I guess I was okay with him until I started hearing the Webster Tarpley rants, and you know, I don't know if you've followed any of his stuff, but I don't know what to think. I'm kind of like, I hate to vote for the lesser of two evils, and I think Cynthia McKinney is probably the ballsiest person that we have out there running, so you know.
Well, I would have voted for her in a heartbeat. All you people who think I was against Hillary because she's a woman, if Cynthia had gotten the nomination, I would be backing her for president right now, even over Obama, especially over McCain. And you're right, I hate year after year after year voting for the lesser of two evils, because it's still evil and it's a darn stupid way to run a country.
So I was going to get back to the Oliver North thing just briefly. You kind
sure.
of took off there on me. I couldn't do that.
I've had too much coffee today.
I can't help but noticing. I'm not a film editor, and I'm just completely intrigued. I want to pick it up because I think of little projects that I'd like to do, and one of them would be kind of a then and now. You know, I sort of did the slow burn, you know, ever since I'm your age, maybe older,
I wouldn't put money on that. I'm older than you think.
Slow burn on, you know, Nixon and his pardon, you know, and so,
yes.
You know, when Oliver North, you know, when that whole thing blew up, I thought, all right, finally we're going to see what's going on here, and heads are going to roll, you know, and so I was really looking forward to it, you know, and now just recently I see, you know, I've seen a video with Ray McGovern, and he's talking about back in those days and how, you know, him and the other, you know, normal people in the Pentagon and the CIA and that, they called, you know, Cheney and Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld the crazies, you know, but they were still around then, and they were, you know, doing the same stuff, you know, back then, and, you know, now they've just kind of rotated into power. But my film project, I'm drifting here too. I was just kind of amazed, you know, just watching, you know, John Conyers, presiding over the, you know, the Kucinich impeachment stuff, and just kind of watching that, and I think, you know, how great would it be to kind of do a then and now, you know, where you have, Daniel Inouye, presiding over Iran-Contra, and him, you know, keeping everybody in line and not, you know, letting, you know, people really, you know, dig in deep, and Conyers now. You know, I think it would be a pretty good project. And as far as, you know, your representative out there, you know, it's on video. This guy has prior knowledge. He knew about the continuity of government and, you know, the secret government with inside a government. It's on video. It's on record. And this guy, you know, somebody should approach him and tell him, you know, he'd better be willing to come forward and make a deal now, because, you know, otherwise he's about, you know, his whole life and career is about ready to be hung out to dry if he doesn't come forward and try to set things straight. So,
okay, Rob, we got to take a break here for some commercials here. And if you're talking about Inouye, it is not going to happen, because Inouye's power base goes back to Vietnam, when Hawaii was used as the transshipment point for heroin from Air America going back to the mainland. And that's his blackmail card on the government and why he cannot be touched. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Fear and hate will rule them, said the demon to his role. In shackles we will bind them to the terror they'll show. As mindless slaves they will not think, blind eyes they will not see. They'll jail themselves and the Barstow Land Security.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our last segment of today's show. And before we proceed, I have a quick announcement for the audience here. I've been doing the show here at GCN for 20 months now. And I've taken a day off here and a day off there for work and everything like this. But I just want to let you all know that my wife and I are kind of taking it easy this weekend. We're not going anywhere. We don't have a lot of money, and we don't want to be fondled to the airports. But we're going to be doing best of shows for the next couple of days, and I'll be back live on the air next Tuesday and rocking and rolling. And I didn't want you to get all upset and think that I'd quit or been fired or something because you're hearing pre-recorded shows. And I hope you'll tune in because our technicians and technical wizards like Ethan and Brady and Oatman have been working very hard to pull out some very good shows to reprise and sort of do a best of. So it might actually be a better set of shows for the next few days than just at random access. Now, getting back to Rob here, there is a very simple rule of thumb in Washington, D.C. Little scandals that can be used to destroy somebody else's political career, like Gary Hart and his girlfriend, or John Edwards and his girlfriend, and Larry Craig and his boyfriend, and so forth and so on. Those are the proper fodder and ammunition for campaign and fighting each other and so forth and so on. But behind all of that are the really big scandals, the secrets that are so terrible that they would destroy the legitimacy of the entire government, secrets that are so bad that even your worst enemies are going to be working to protect you. And this is like, Nixon's links to the John F. Kennedy assassination, or the fact that the U.S. government is, in fact, behind a huge amount of cocaine smuggled into the United States and sold to ordinary American people through people like Freeway Ricky Ross, who is now in this documentary that's about to come out. And these various other things, like lying us into the Iraq War, lying us into Vietnam, the Gulf of Tonkin, there were no torpedoes in the harbor, just over and over and over again. These are the scandals that are so big they could bring down the entire government, and nobody wants to talk about those. Those are the really big secrets that are hidden behind the doors, and the people who know them become untouchable because they've got that blackmail ability against the entire government. Obviously, right now, the people who have got the inside information on 9/11 are in a position to call the shots in the United States government. Sadly, these individuals may, in fact, be loyal to a foreign government. And that's just part of the intrigue that goes on behind the scenes. All that we see at the conventions, the posters, the buttons, the bumper stickers, that's really the window dressing. There is a public presentation that is made to the voters to reassure them that they still have some control and that this is still their nation somehow. But the real dark heart of politics is going on behind the scenes. We see that with the Clintons and their links to Iran-Contra and all that drug money. And again, even without getting into that kind of stuff, go back and look at the contracts that Hillary Clinton was writing for the people who were buying their houses and the housing projects for Flowerwood and Casa Grande and Whitewater. And they were just usurious arrangements and clauses. And if she's going to treat her customers like that, she's going to treat everybody like that. And these are the things you've got to dig out for yourself. Because if you rely on a politician to tell you about themselves, they're going to tell you they're great. Hitler was a master at it. Everybody thought Hitler was doing a wonderful job because he said so. And the media helped him sell that. And we know now, of course, that he wasn't. He was not a very good man. He wrecked his country. And so you, especially the younger voters, please don't be trusting. Go find out for yourself. Again, the book Compromise, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA by Terry Reed gives you the origins of this Clinton-Bush duopoly that to this very day is still trying to run this country exclusively for themselves. And thank goodness Hillary is out of the race, because it means it's either going to be Obama or McCain, and McCain is Bush light, which is why I don't like him. But, we're finally starting to yank power away from the Clinton and Bush duopoly. Anyway, Rob, I didn't mean to wander off and leave you there. What else is on your mind?
I guess just one last thing. You know, I never hear anybody mention about the Iran heroin trade. And do you think that's kind of why we've, had such a thing against Iran for such a long time, or is it just the oil?
You know, wars are never fought for just one reason, and certainly there is no question that as soon as the United States went into Afghanistan and kicked out the Taliban, who were very anti-drug, all of a sudden we're hearing about Afghani opium crops with bumper crops, and the opium is flowing, and the price is falling, and tons of it are coming to the United States. So as far as Iran is concerned, yeah, if we go to war in Iran, yes, it's going to be the oil and the opium and this and that and making Israel happy. You know, wars are never fought for just one reason. What you do is you wait until there's enough people who've got a reason to invade country X, and then you all team up on them, and you jump on them, and you smash them, grab what it is you personally wanted, and go home and build statues to yourself.
All right. Thanks, Mike. You're doing a great job. Keep it up.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Aloha, and okay, there he goes. That was Rob in Minnesota. Yes, I did have too much coffee today. I will confess, I'm a caffeine junkie here. And it's a combination of very long hours. I was actually up at 2 o'clock this morning, Hawaii time, because of craziness we had out front. So that's why I'm dealing with all the coffee. Looking at the economy, we might as well take these last few minutes to do the economy here. The local newspapers are reporting Hawaii tourism is down 14% over last year. That's not as bad as I thought was just from wandering around Waikiki and taking a look. But again, it just underscores the fact that you cannot run a tourist economy when your airports are fondling and groping people and going through their luggage and not letting them on the plane because they've got wires in their bras, not to mention dropping and breaking their laptops. And, you know, we know that this whole war on terror thing was just a hoax. It was a sales pitch to get us to go along with invading Afghanistan and invading Iraq and potentially invading Iran, although that looks to have been called off. And it's just, it's marketing. It's marketing the war. And it's time for this to go away because TSA is doing more damage to Hawaii than Osama bin Laden could dream of doing, even if he was still alive. More economic news. Stock market today was kind of lukewarm, ended slightly up, but no big surprises there. Bankruptcy filings have surged 29%, and this is in spite of all those laws that they passed a couple of years back to make it much harder to file for bankruptcy. And when we saw them passing those laws and they were trying to sell them, saying, oh, there's a bunch of deadbeats out there and we've got to guard against them. And observers were saying, somebody's expecting the economy to take a major tank because they're closing all the little trap doors and escape hatches, you know, for people who are getting trapped by the debt. And they're trying to, like, block it all off so that we're stuck with it. And even with all those laws that they did pass, bankruptcy filings are still up 29% here. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is staffing up in anticipation of more banks failing in the next several months, is estimated to need $500 billion financing from the U.S. Treasury. That means you, your wallet. And you know something? This is beginning to smell like the SNL bailout. Again, going back to that first Bush presidency, where they had the big SNL crisis. They took the rules off the savings and loans. They made some very reckless investments. They lost a ton of money. And then they started saying, oh, those poor depositors, the widows and the orphans and the pensioners, we must save them. And tons of taxpayer money flowed back through the Resolution Trust Corporation. Turned out most of the accounts that were being restored were corporate accounts anyway. Some of them were linked to CIA drug dealing. In fact, I've covered this before, right into the Iran-Contra cash pipeline, huge amounts of money. This may be why President Bush the Elder once said, Sarah McClendon said, if the American people ever figure out what we really did, they'd chase us down the street and lynch us. And we may yet. Now, another little worrying sign right now is that corporations are basically looting their own pension funds in order to pay their executives added benefits, higher salaries, and bonuses. And supposedly the tax laws allow them to do this and even give them a tax credit. But basically what it means is your retirement, your pension from the company you've worked your entire life for, don't hold your breath waiting for it because you're not going to get it. That executive's new yacht out there in the harbor, that was your retirement right there. All right, well, we're going to shut down here. Thanks to Ethan for twiddling the dials. And again, we're going to be doing repeats of the show for the next few days. I'll be back live next Tuesday. Have a good holiday weekend. Safe. Drive careful. Watch out for the cops. They're handing out tickets left and right. Aloha, America.